Anything you want to say about the picture?
I think I can zoom in to give you a...
I had some ideas about it.
Over to you.
Over to me? Okay. So, up on the very top, we have like the pole star traveling through the river of time, which is the precession of the equinoxes. Mm-hmm. And it starts up there with Cancer, which really is where civilization began in that period.
Why don't we, could we just kill the middle light? That might give us light, and yet... That's a little better, huh?
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Jung relates the pole star to the self, I guess the transcendent self, or the
guiding function.
Uh-huh. And so we have it, like, it's like that pole star is traveling that river of time of the precession of the equinoxes. And from the area of the beginning of Aquarius, it's like we have a meteorite coming down. And to me,
that... Where's that, Carol?
To the far right.
Oh, yeah.
And that's in what?
Coming out of Aquarius.
Aquarius, okay.
And to me, that sort of hints at Jung's destiny, that could, because they talk about a meteorite landing at the foot of the shaman or the healer, and it's
right.
coming from that influence,
right.
You know, so that sort of speaks to me in that way. And then we have that serpent as a queen, as like a queen over the whole scene. And she rises out of the urn, which is, I think, the individual container. And the individual flame or spirit. And then the universal flame we see under the seafloor. So it's like the individual manifestation of that serpent power. And this serpent seems to unite above and below, because she goes from... all the way up and down.
Right.
And she reminds me of the Tao as the serpent, mm-hmm. or the Shining Valley Spirit, the one that unites the opposites, because she is uniting the opposites of above and below.
Mm-hmm.
So those were my
beautiful
reactions.
Mm-hmm. Why do you see the serpent specifically as female?
I've always thought of the serpent as female.
Because it relates to Sophia and wisdom? Or that's just your interest?
I think that's cultural, really. And, you know, even in the Orient, you see it that way, too.
You know, those snakes were sacred to those early mother goddesses,
okay.
Very typically.
I mean, it's part of just being in our culture, I think. But I see it as a queen.
With the meteorite coming from Aquarius, do you see that as indicative of the age of Aquarius?
I see that as
his vision.
His sensibilities of what Aquarius means, and his relating that to us as you know, as part of his role as healer and physician.
The town scene, is that like Zurich? Is that where he was born? I mean, it's definitely in the mountains, in the Alps.
I don't know. I can't recognize it as Zurich particularly.
Okay.
Actually, it's just a typical Swiss village.
Okay.
But it could be more specific. I felt that was really important. The village was in there.
The sense of community.
Yeah.
Between the two. See, I saw it as the two rivers, the river of the depth, which was actually maybe above,
yep.
and below, I don't know. And,
yeah, it certainly
you know,
could be.
I saw that there's the two rivers there, and where they come together is in time and space,
mm-hmm.
in the village, in the community of the time. I also wondered if the fire and the serpent out of the fire wasn't relating to his then experience with Toni Wolff at this time period as well.
Yeah, I should check when actually he met her. If it's not about her, it's about the energy that
came out.
That came out with. We'll see. She appears indirectly in here, I think.
Yeah. You see, there's a little ship getting ready to take someone from that town on a voyage.
Oh, is there?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Well, you got a good eye, girl.
Yeah, right there. Right in the center.
Oh, here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is a single fish? I mean, usually you see fish in schools when you go to the sea, and that is there symbolism that's associated with the fishing?
Your guess is as good as mine. What would you say?
I'd say you put it there for the sake of the composition, but
that's just me. That's an artist speak.
Well, that fish really spoke to me because I had a fish dream. Mm-hmm. In the dream, fish literally bites me, and I awake, and I have bruised myself. That's what woke me up. Was it hurt? You know, fish was biting me, and I literally had finger marks and bruises, and I broke the skin. This is my dream in Rome, and then I got up, went to the bathroom, went back to bed to sleep. And then I had the dream about the bridge, which is on the next page, which was just phenomenal. So I just, and the ship that Ariana is on right now is one mast. It is a one sail. It just was all in there for me.
A fish, with respect to your dream, the fish would be like representative of this interest, which has grabbed you. Mm-hmm. And fish, because it's still coming up from the depths. Now, if that fish therefore could be what's going to grab Jung in these active imaginations, that's very possible.
Isn't the fish also a symbol of Christianity?
Could be. That, in a way, he's...
That's part of his work?
Yeah, I've said it before, and I say again, but I feel Jung has tried to move Christianity forward. I mean, it sounds like he's debunking it, but he's not. He's really trying to move it forward.
Well, there's a real difference between deconstructing something just to be destructive
right.
and deconstructing in order to recreate.
Yeah, you can see he's like recasting Christianity.
If you imagine it that way, which I agree with, to me this is a unity of worlds, but back to the snake, when the snake was, the Buddhist mother talked about that, she was an image of life in the process of becoming, which was a female-identified image that then became corrupted in Christianity. And not only corrupted, but potentiated by becoming evil. And so if you look at this, that's what this forms the D, which is the first letter of what he's going to begin to write about. Mm-hmm. It's almost as though in that logos, which is he's kicking off with its feminine energy that's once again rising in a fire, mm-hmm. which is again that idea of an energy that is powerful, mm-hmm. and unabatable. It cannot be a fire.
Yeah, you could say maybe he's trying to return respectability to the snake. And it's about time, but it's not easy.
And all the images of coral at the bottom and the value in that,
mm-hmm.
the living jewels of you know, the sea.
The coral right under the fish, it looks like a mouth to me, and it, when I looked at it the first time, it made me feel like it's not safe. It's no longer safe. See, you know, fish usually hide in the coral, and but now the danger and the Nin has a quote that the time came when the risk turned into tight in the guy, but yeah, and that's what it reminds me, you know, like the fish is like, okay, this is too dark, too dangerous, so I'm going to venture up towards the surface, and you know, maybe knowing or maybe not knowing about fishermen and the dangers that are there.
What are these things down in the lower corner that look like ice cream?
I think they're jellyfish.
Jellyfish.
Mm-hmm. Which are the very thinnest one in the very deepest part of the ocean. The big.
So that means this is the ocean then, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Are there freshwater jellyfish?
Not that I'm aware of.
I hadn't noticed that.
And if you think about what's rising up from the collective unconscious,
right.
then we have has Carol, what did you call that, Carol, at the very bottom, the way it's...
The transpersonal spirit, as opposed to the individual.
And so it's similar in color to the fire. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if...
What's similar in color?
I think it does look like a fire.
Right.
The coral?
At the very bottom, underneath the coral.
The fire coming up.
The very bottom
like
of that.
Almost like a lava dome.
I see. Yeah.
It has a little...
You guys got
good
eyes.
That's the fire I was speaking of when I said the fire, the impersonal fire.
I see.
As opposed to the personal fire of the urn.
Brilliant. So, you guys get A pluses.
Yeah, so you've got the heat of the collective unconscious, and then almost as if it's being expressed in that container that the snake comes out of, so that the spirit of the depth is getting expressed in time and space.
By that person.
Right.
Yes.
By this
Beautiful.
Individual.
Which is their own prima materia.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. You guys are doing
One more thing I'd like to say about the fish is that this I have a three-dimensional work of art that's absolutely gorgeous, that's etched in glass, six pieces of glass. And in it, she had no concept of him, no concept of what she was doing consciously. But she did these etchings of a fish, and it was going from right to left as into the unconscious, is the way I interpreted it. Then when it comes out in a spiral, and then turns right, going back into the world, into the world.
Wow.
And that's what this fish is doing, if you could look at it that way. So he's bringing something to light to give to the world.
And the whole spiraling aspect of the snake as well.
Yes. And so this must be the ocean then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has to be the coral.
Coral? There's no freshwater coral. Mm-hmm. So we missed that completely.
The other thing I love is that there's the non-duality, because of the day or night.
Of wholeness of all, and
our minds try to move one direction or the other, but this isn't allowing that. Holding the duality in the consciousness. And non-duality.
Barbara, were you going to say something?
That fish looks like a rainbow trout. Mm-hmm. Mm. I don't know what that is. I mean, I don't know if it is for sure.
They're freshwater, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Pardon?
They're freshwater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it could be that it's a portrait of opposites. Well, there's one thing you haven't said. Well, you sort of alluded to it, Kathy. We're going to talk about the spirit of the depths.
Mm. But that's the snake.
Yeah, right. And but the center of the picture is time and space.
Mm-hmm. But everything points upwards. And in marketing and advertising, we talk about vectors drawing your eyes to a certain point.
Oh yeah.
You put your words where you know you want the angles of whatever the piece is to draw to the main idea of the piece. So. If you look at a billboard and somebody has their arm out, it's going to be pointing to
look where their arm is going.
Yeah, because if it's a good billboard, it's going to direct your eye whether you know it or not. And with this, there's no place to rest your eye until you get to the bottom, and then every angle and vector from the coil of the fish's fin to the sail to the steeple to the mountain, it just all goes up as though this can't be repressed. It can't be held down because everything is moving upward from the hot bottom to the coral and then just goes on. So it has a lot more dynamism than I saw initially when I first looked at it.
Still, I want to stress that he puts the village at the center.
Mm-hmm.
So all what I get out of it is, and you know, there's no right and wrong here. All of this is for the sake of life, living in the world.
And then the sense of the journey too, because of the ship, to me is also central.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that it's one sail to me says individual journey. Mm-hmm. And that each person's journey is their own.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the collective is the church steeple.
Good point.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel that that realm up above is coming down to as if there's a meeting. And then there's also a movement to me forward in the future too, the way everything is flowing across.
And even the mountains, if you think of everything meeting in the center at the village, those mountains with snow on them could almost be ski slopes. It's neat to see it this big. This is, I'm getting much more out of it.
Well, maybe we should keep doing it. We're not going to get it out of that TV. I'm a little conflicted about how to do this. I think you'd get a lot better on the wall, but I don't feel like lugging my projector around all the time, to be honest with you.
They don't have one here.
I don't know.
If you could give us kind of a heads up about the images that we're going to look at, we'll probably won't look more than one image a time.
Probably not.
Yeah, okay. So
you could have looked at it yourself.
Yeah.
I like the idea that it's bigger than... I had asked for a digital projector first, and this is what they brought, which actually is more convenient than bringing my computer, hooking it up, you know. But I'm not sure what to say. Do they have a digital projector?
That I don't know.
No,
I don't.
Well, it could be that we study it on our own at home, and then...
It really is nice seeing it up there and talking about it, I have to say.
And having different people's perspective.
Yeah.
That's very helpful.
And big, and we were checking the color, pretty true to color. I think we've done a decent job, and I photographed it, and Carol is polishing them up with Photoshop. So it's a team effort. So I don't know. Maybe I'll bring my projector anyway. I'll see. I'll call Karen. She gave me a name of somebody to talk to here, and I lost it, as I said. Or it's in my email, and I can't find it, one or the other. See if they got a projector and how they feel about letting us use it. I think we're not going to... Imagine that image up there. It's not going to be the same.
And there are some other sea creatures there that I don't think we can see very well. It almost looks like on the lower left there's an octopus, but I could be wrong. And then there's a lobster. Or maybe a... I couldn't make out whether it was
a lobster.
Right? Yeah, with the big claws over.
Where's the lobster?
It's over by the things that look like ice cream cones. On the right, Gary. The blue jellyfish keep going up above the coral.
Come
up
and over.
Right where your hand is. Keep going back. There you go. He's right there.
Oh, that's a lobster.
It's a huge lobster.
Oh, it would be great to have a screen, too. That would show up a lot clearer. Well, let's see.
But it's sure nice to hear your points of view and have it sort of bigger than life.
To be able to see even the brush strokes is so great. That's just a labor of love right there.
Yep, the labor of love is exactly right.
But at the time, this wouldn't have really had any meaning to him. He would have just felt compelled to put these things together, right?
I think so. The tools that we are using, he wouldn't have had. All he would have had was Freud. Well, snake is sex, you know, that sort of thing.
Is it significant that the blue in the water looks like the same blue that's up in the top part of the sky?
Yeah, I think that's what Kathy was saying. And, you know, we talk about the spirit of the depths and the spirit of the times. But I think, see, the spirit of the depths is both down and up. It's a spiritual possibility and it's an emotional reality. It's both. That's where I would get out of it. Really taking off your comment. As I said, who knows? We're free to speculate. Let's see. We got in the next page where we started off talking about the spirit of the depths. That's the picture.
I had something to say about that picture.
Which one?
I looked up the plants.
Oh, okay.
Cool. The one is foxglove.
that red one on the right. And the foxglove is a healing plant. It can be poisonous if swallowed, and it's the source of digitalis. And it's associated with Hera or Juno, who and Flora used foxglove to induce parthenogenetic pregnancy in Juno, who then became pregnant with Mars. That's the story. So it's like immaculate conception plant, you might say.
Works for me.
And the blue one is monk's hood, or wolfbane, and it's a poison, also used as a sedative and a diuretic. And in Gustav Meyrink's, he's always referring to Meyrink, in Gustav Meyrink's The Cardinal Napolis, monk's hood is identified with religious beliefs and connected to the idea of fate.
Hmm.
Now, which blues, which plant are you talking about?
The left and the right blue plants.
They're different, though.
They're actually
the leaves are
supposed to be the same.
Oh, really?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You mean these here?
The ones on either side. Yeah.
That's a butterfly, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other red plant on the left is the really rare one called spike, also called Celtic valerian. And it was used by Galen to cure stomach ills, you know, the famous physician in antiquity. It's calming and revitalizing. And the most interesting thing is that Mary Magdalene was said to have anointed Jesus with nard oil, which is the essential oil of this plant.
Hmm.
And it's also used in a perfumed bath.
Hmm.
And which one are you talking about, Carol?
I'm talking about...
I'll bring my pointer next time so we can...
The red plant on the left.
Okay.
Okay. Which is a very rare plant. And it's found in Switzerland. It's found up in the Alps in mountainous regions. Mm-hmm. It's also called Celtic valerian. And it has that myth associated with it of Mary Magdalene and Jesus.
What about the little mushroom looking under the center of the...
That is a very poisonous mushroom. At least the one that I know that looks like that. Common in all over Europe, really.
What did you say that wolfbane was?
Monk's hood. But I just wondered if he did that intentionally, or...
Let's assume the unconscious was speaking.
Mm-hmm. But all those themes, you know, are themes within his work.
Yeah, I'm going to say he couldn't have known.
That's what I'm thinking.
At this point. He did this when he was 70, that's another thing, but...
Mm-hmm.
No, he didn't know what the self was at this point, or any of that stuff.
And that those had the transforming, and that's why the butterflies here, all of those things will
See,
be part of the
butterfly is by the foxglove. That's the Immaculate Conception plant,
okay.
So to speak.
But there's this sort of admixture of poison and healing in that picture from different angles.
Yes. And the foxglove can also be poisonous, but it can also create spontaneous pregnancy, according to the myth.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it can go either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that would mean this experience could either poison you or it could heal you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Nietzsche, as we go through this, you'll see, as you've done Nietzsche, it's very similar at points. And this, where Jung will, the difference will be, Jung will have an experience and then he'll critique it. Nietzsche didn't critique it. And if you have the experience and you don't critique it, that's poison. If you have the experience and you do critique it, then it's healing. That's the big difference.
That's where the meaning comes from.
And that's where the meaning... I told you this story, I think, maybe some of you, a long time ago. A friend of mine's wife went nuts. And he came home and he found her naked... in with her feet propped up on the windowsill with her vagina to the sun. And she was babbling that God had made her pregnant. And he took her to the doctor, and they said, well, you know, she's hopeless. We got to incarcerate her. Got to put her in the hospital. And probably it's, you know, bad prognosis, late onset schizophrenia. And he called me up and said, God, will you talk to her? So I said, sure. So she started babbling. I just told her to shut the F up and listen to what I say, or she's going to spend the rest of her days in a psychiatric hospital. And I said, you are pregnant, but not in the way you think. You know, you're not carrying a child. God didn't, fuck you, pardon me, but that's what I said to get her attention. And I said, but you have a new growth in you, and you've got to figure out what that is. And she listened, and she snapped out of it, and she started art. And now she has paintings hanging in galleries in Los Angeles. So that she was pregnant with the spirit, but she literalized it. And see, that's the poison. And in interpreting it, she could realize it's a new beginning that's called for, and she started painting. So that Jung is in a very similar situation, attacked by experience, and if you understand its meaning, you're okay. If you literalize it, you're not okay. Okay, back to our text. So this is kind of how we'll go. I'll try, and then you guys chip in, and we'll see how we feel. So that theme continues for a while. At least in that paragraph. The idea is that the spirit of the times is arrogant, filled with human pride and blinded by the presumptuous spirit of the times. I long sought to hold that other spirit away from me. So you could say, and again, I'm just trying to give you other words. They probably don't do the experience complete justice, but to get some handle, you could say the way the conscious personality sees the historical moment versus the way the unconscious personality sees the historical moment. It's always this historical moment. What's going on in history? How can I not be swept up in the stream? And can I, by not getting swept up in the stream and understanding what is really going on, contribute to the healing not only of me, but of my time? But the spirit of the depths is humiliating to have to articulate. Because nobody wants to hear it. Everybody will feel insulted by it. And therefore, he writes there near the end of that paragraph, the spirit of the depths has submerged all pride and arrogance to the power of judgment. He's referring now to the spirit. And I think this is an important sentence, which we're going to see in Jung's work all the time. He took away my belief in science. Think about it. Let that really work on you. See, it's what this new understanding is doing is limiting the relevance of the scientific worldview. So it's saying we put too much faith in science.
And he's saying this as a scientist.
As a scientist. And he's not going to give up science, but he will recast science as he recasts religion. Why? To be true to this voice. He can no longer operate purely in the scientific world once he's heard that thought. That's what it means to let this stuff work on somebody.
There's a new book out about near-death experiences in which this very prominent physician has studied, you know, 180 or 200 people who had near-death experiences mm-hmm. from all over the world.
Yeah.
And he has concluded as a result that there has to be an afterlife because he studied children and adults and in every culture, whether they're Christian or not, whether they have any sort of belief system or not, the experience is almost identical down to the words that they use to describe it. He said that the people he studied are so vastly different
right.
that if the experience wasn't genuine,
they would not be able to come up with the same stories. And he went to remote places where they don't have access to, mm-hmm. you know, the books and movies and things. And so so he's now convinced and on crusade to convince the scientific community that there is an afterlife.
I'm sure. I have no doubt.
I can't remember his name. He's an oncologist, and he's quite well known, and he's hawking his book now, so it's been in a lot of...
He was on Today Show, I saw him.
Yeah, he was on Today Show, and there's an article in the Post, and... Did you see it?
I saw him interviewed, yeah.
And what did you think? I didn't see
it. Exactly, the same thing, and he brought someone with him who had a near-death experience, and she had no concept of God as such, and so she was really taken with the whole experience, and she was dead.
And Meredith Sierra was very skeptical and dismissive. I thought Meredith Sierra was very skeptical and dismissive.
Yes, she
was. Which made me uncomfortable for them.
Wait, see, that's the spirit of the time versus the spirit of the depth.
There
absolutely.
There you go.
She really didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, and that's what the spirit of the time does. Huh?
She was trying to be curious about it. Mm-hmm.
That's the vulgar thing.
She could sort of put out.
Yeah.
Which kind of surprised me about her. I just had no idea.
She was probably
great. Well, you see, what it does, it unearths all our moorings in the spirit of the time. The spirit of the time isn't adequate to understanding the problems we're facing. That's the bottom line here. We've got to develop a deeper understanding, and the first thing we learn is science will not be able to rule. But Jung will be wrestling, so what do you do with it then? He's not going to throw it out, but he's not going to deify it either. And we deify. I was just talking to a clinical psychologist recently, and in a good spirit, we were talking about Jung versus American psychology, and she made the comment that something about handling somebody in a very difficult situation that you shouldn't shout at them. I said, well, why? And she said, because scientific research shows, serious, that in those moments, strong affect on the part of the therapist is contraindicated. I said, okay, maybe most of the time, but in every single instance, science works with averages. We work with individuals. See how that works? And you know, it was a good spirit of conversation, and she pointed out, she didn't disagree with me, she said, but suppose that patient will go off and do something suicidal. I could be sued because I couldn't show in court a scientific basis for what I said. Excuse to show you how powerful this science is. These are real problems. Okay, so the first thing we hear is that the scientific worldview is challenged. So that you could say is being deconstructed. You know, understand what I mean when I say deconstructed? But what it's being deconstructed so it can be reconstructed in a wider context. That is one of the challenges of our time that we get out of that little bit of a sentence in the first page of Jung's Act of Imagination. The huge challenge of how do we understand and utilize science. He robbed me of the joy of explaining and ordering things. Well, that's science. He let devotion to the ideals of this time die out in me. So science has to be questioned, and our ideals have to be questioned. What are some of our ideals? Competition, wealth, power. All of this, you see, is being undermined in two sentences. I'm trying to think if we should tackle the next one. What I thought I would do, you okay with that so far?
Mm-hmm.
Is when I can see in his rather, you know, dense prose, seeds of further ideas, of later ideas, I brought along those later ideas. So we can hear how he refined this original message, and maybe that'll help us understand it. So what I've done is I gave you that sheet, or I sent you an email to that sheet. And from time to time, I will refer to those as helping us understand the ideas here, and as giving us a way to understand how the ideas here led to his further developing his psychology. So here is a complete dense paragraph. Let's try to understand it. But the supreme meaning is the path. See where I am there at the bottom of second column of 229? Mm-hmm. Because he starts to letter it in a bigger lettering style. But the supreme meaning is the path, the way and the bridge to what is to come. That is the God yet to come. It is not the coming God himself, but his image which appears in the supreme meaning. God is an image, and those who worship him must worship him in the image of the supreme meaning. That might be just a place to stop right there. That's quite a bit. Let me try to say how I understand it, and then we'll go to some of these quotes, which I feel might elucidate it a little bit. In a way, this goes to what we were discussing earlier with you, Barb. Another of the implications, besides doubting science, besides doubting ideals, is doubting religion. All three of these we are being asked to reconsider by this experience. He is, how can I put it? I think what he's saying is the nature of religious experience is changing. Why? Because that's what's going on inside. We are being challenged to reevaluate our understanding of science, ideals, and religion. God is now a path. God is not a person. God is not some historical event. God is a path. God is the way you live your life. I sometimes jokingly say God has changed from a noun to an adverb. And the way and the bridge to what is to come. So God is working. God is our working to make this change. God isn't prayer. God isn't going to church. God isn't mass. God is the effort to make the future appear. That is not the representation of God. That is God. So the religious life, you see, is redefined. The religious task is to be working on this change. It is not the coming God himself, but his image which appears in the supreme meaning. So the supreme meaning would be the meaning of what you're accomplishing. Now, this is my understanding, at least. In dreams, that is symbolized and represented by God. So it isn't that there is no image of God. it's that the image of God has become what symbolizes your meaning in working toward the future. Does this make sense? No. Where should we restart?
God is symbolized and presented as the meaning of what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. With the proviso, I believe, that accomplish to serve the spirit of the depths.
Maybe it would be helpful to add that no time does he say he knows the true nature of God, so to speak, what that transcendent.
Well, you see, this negates God as transcendence. I think that's one of the big things.
Well, he doesn't. He says he doesn't even know. He can't comment on that.
One of the implications is, and we'll be pursuing this too in more depth, that transcendence is not knowable. I know we're throwing out so many new ideas here. Let's just try to make sure we understand the basic that, see, in a way, it gets to be very Chinese. It's the Tao. I think that's how I might try to put it. Another way, I'll just try to put it in different words in my own language. God is how I live. You know, God doesn't affect how I live. God is how I live. So it becomes the quality of what I do in the world. Again, I think because of the bridge to what has come, helping the world make this shift to another point of view. God is an image, and those who worship him must worship him in the images of supreme meaning. So your path is a manifestation in reality of a God image inside yourself. And I think what's so weird here is, remember, we're talking, this is the unconscious speaking, okay? This does not make sense. So we've got to try to put our sense into it. But from the unconscious's point of view, there's no difference between the image of God and living out your task. They're the same thing.
Would you say that last one? Your path is... Image.
Image of God equals living out your path.
Image of God equals living out your path. Thank you.
Got it.
Somebody got it.
The manifestation of the God image.
Hold those thoughts. Now let's go to hear Jung's reformulation of these ideas. Maybe that'll help. So if you go to the photocopies. Look at the second quote there for 229. I think it's saying the same thing. Man's relation to God probably has to undergo a certain important change. See where I am? Instead of the propitiating praise to an unpredictable king, or the child's prayer to a loving father, the responsible living and fulfilling of the divine will in us will be our form of worship of and commerce with God. I think it's saying the same thing more clearly down the road.
Commerce implies an exchange of goods and services.
Yes. God puts a demand on me, and I respond, and then God helps me.
But see, if God were not willing to help, then I would have no responsibility to provide a service.
Right.
Or a good.
Exactly.
So God needs us as much as we need God.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
If we change, God changes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And in a sense, then we're working in tandem for this supreme meaning.
Right. You might say God has become working in tandem with God.
Okay.
It's hard to express logically because you always contradict yourself.
But the highest value then isn't God, it's the supreme meaning of that experience in time and space.
Of your efforts in time and space.
Okay.
So then God is not omnipotent.
Right.
Nor does he want to be.
Right. All of this, you see, you're reaching the conclusions that he will be reaching along the way.
That's really frightening. That's very disconcerting if
absolutely.
You haven't already kind of played around with this.
Because see, it's a praise to a loving father. Loving father is gone. Unpredictable king, who's going to take care of you? You. Very upsetting. Very anxiety producing. Very alone creating.
The word responsibility.
But that's what you gain is responsibility.
And then, in this iteration, then what is God's purpose?
That's a good question. Ask your daughter.
There you go.
No, it's not separate from ours.
That's a nice response, yeah.
And asking that question puts God in a place that's separate from us, and any language that creates that gap is an old way of thinking about God. So I think the difficulty is the word God creates such confusing harmony because we have an image of a human form that we are interacting with. And what he's saying is it is not a human form, but our brains still want to, our imagination still want to create.
That's really helpful.
And also the idea that there's a gap between us and God.
Yes, very helpful.
It's taught that God came in, created the earth, and then it became corrupted, so he left, and now our job is to get back to him. Creates all of these images of separation. And what he's saying here is there's no separation.
Yeah.
So it's the purposelessness of God is our purpose.
Yeah.
So and I think the joy in that is that I can stay with whatever is occurring to me. Whatever is occurring to me is my path. It's mine to follow, mine to question, mine to wonder, mine to engage in conversation. So with that responsibility, but then that's my responsibility.
Yep. That's the trade-off.
To what's occurring to me.
And God then becomes a dynamic.
Right.
It's an energy.
Yeah.
It's a force. It's
easier to say what God isn't, which you did very well. It is not some guy out there. It is not, I forget what she said.
Well, there's no gap between
there's no gap.
God. It's not a human form.
That's easier to say what it isn't. What it is harder to articulate, but it is somehow fulfilling your meaning is God.
Not separate. In any way.
Right.
Okay.
If
our purpose is to become conscious, that's God's purpose as well, right?
Through us, right.
That's what Job is all about.
And to get to your question, I don't really have an answer, but where I think we're going, see, it sort of implies that there's a God of history or something like that, or that historical development. It's very Hebrew in a way. Historical development is where you see God. I mean, as soon as I express it, I've expressed it in an old language, unfortunately. But that somehow the meaning of life is for history to move forward on its determined course, which is God. You know, I'm serious. Run this by your daughter. I'm curious what she says.
Well, if I can figure out how to rephrase it.
Yeah.
Because the God in me is getting a headache.
Oh.
This is hard.
It's
fascinating, and I love it. That's really.
Well, let's stop for today. We've done enough. We'll pick up and redo this, I think, next time, because it's as you may remember from other courses, we tend to go slow anyway, but a lot slower at the beginning. And so we get some of these basic ideas down, which then will come back again and again and again. But in these first three or four sentences here, we've got worlds of change, science, ideals, God, in just a couple of sentences. And all of this, then he worked all the implications you raised, Tammy, he worked out in books, book-length responses to those questions. So you're right on target. It's just we'll have to try to get it bit by bit and then watch it get broadened out as we go along. And then certainly refer to his works where he addressed that question of science, you know, at great length, and ideals at great length, and so on. So I think we've got through page, huh? Not quite. Well, that's good to get through a page. But I think you don't have to read anything more. We're probably not going to get that far. And you want to keep the time at 12:30 or 12:45, or what do you care? Or
whatever. Not to do 12:30. Otherwise, you'll just have to hang around. And if we can be here.
Okay, let's do 12:30 then.
Okay.
12:30. And Tammy, do you mind telling the church that whoever books this room that we'll be meeting at 12:30, and tell them.
Actually, I'll see Karen tomorrow, so I'll just have her call.
Okay.
Because I don't know who she talks
to. Okay. If you have any problems, let me know.
Okay.
I just don't want to... I don't want them to feel we're jerking around with the time, but...
Oh, no.
They won't mind.
There's not a huge demand for the swim during the day.
It's not. But maybe I should just call Karen, because I want to find out about that projector anyway.
Okay.
I'll just take care of that.
Okay.
So I've got a call about the projector, and I think I'm going to lug that projector around anyway, even. No? You don't think I should?
That's up to you, because I hate for you to have to do it.
I do too, but I hate to look at that stupid TV, because it's not going to be the same.
Well, let's face it, we need it.
We need it. Sweet. Yeah. Okay, so I'll see if the church has got one. If not, I'll just have to bring mine.
I need
to
take care of whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I
like. Okay, yeah, I know Karen asked. She told me who to contact, and it's somewhere in my email list. I couldn't find it. So 2 weeks, we'll do no new readings. This is kind of the way it's going to go, it looks like. You okay with the basic form? Bring your title and all. Run it by your daughter. I'm serious. I'd love to hear what she says.
What's God's purpose? That's a good question. Good child.
The thing that's the freakiest is that she doesn't even think. She just tells
me. Yeah. Comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, she knows.
Is that, she's in touch with the spirit of death.
Yeah. She is.
That's it. Okay, thank you. And we'll just try to do it. So 12:30 then.